We turn to Bahrain, which we've been covering since the beginning of anti-government protests in February. Much controversy is centered around events at Salmania Hospital in Manama, where injured protesters sought treatment. Human Rights Watch and other rights groups say they have credible evidence that soldiers detained and tortured medical personnel who treated the protesters. But the government denies these allegations. Meanwhile, 47 doctors and nurses are waiting trial on a variety of charges, including attempts to topple the Sunni monarchy. Dr. Nabil Al-Nassari is chief of emergency medicine at Salmania Hospital and heads the Bahrain Medical Society. On a recent visit to Washington, he told VOA Cecily Hillary the hospital was held under siege by protesters, not the military, and that for 4 weeks they prevented others from getting necessary care. And he says Bahrain can back this up with evidence of its own.
Were you in the hospital that night?
That night, no, I wasn't at the hospital, but I was monitoring.
It's my understanding that enough people presented themselves for medical care that doctors and nurses very quickly ran out of supplies.
You surprised me with this question or with the statement.
Why?
Because, again, we have enough evidence, not taken by us, by the extremists, so-called, a group of those demonstrators, which shows how ample the supplies were there. Again, it is available for public view.
On a normal night in an emergency room, though, in any major city, in any place in the world, if you suddenly have hundreds of people running in, covered in tear gas, coughing, gagging, are you saying that the hospital, any hospital, would be staffed to cope with something like that?
That's a good question. I am trained in disaster medicine. We are actually very well staffed and equipped and trained to handle emergencies. At one time, we can handle up to 250 to 300 emergencies if they come in. Urgencies and emergencies. Tear gas exposure is usually not an emergency. It can be, depending on the condition of the patient. What happened that day, our plan was not activated the right way. There were people who were non-emergency physicians, took over the emergency department, and they started running the department and the disaster plan according to what they thought should be appropriate. Those physicians were orthopedic surgeons, dentists, neonatologists, with totally no background in emergency medicine or disaster medicine.
What brought them to the emergency room that night then? Was it understaffed? Was it a sudden emergency?
No, we had enough staff, but those who came in with the demonstrators, they forced themselves on the staff. And this is, I'm telling you, not a hearsay. I was in contact with the people. They were kind of, our people were put aside. If they were needed to handle any real emergencies, then they were brought in to help. Otherwise, the other doctors were taking over the place. So we were occupied by physicians who were not trained in the specialty to handle all of these things.
But they were physicians who worked in the hospital.
Yes.
They were. So if I'm understanding you, the protesters come into the hospital and doctors from the outside came in. Are you saying that they were organized to take over the hospital, or? Well,
they did not come alone, the protesters. They came with the doctors.
Yes.
A lot of doctors were with them at the GCC roundabout, or what they call the pair roundabout.
Participating in the protest, presumably.
Yes, they were there with them. And I think, as I said initially in the beginning, that the plan was, if there was an attack by the government on the roundabout, to come to the hospital. And again, it is on YouTube, and one of their leaders stated this, that at that time they were going to come to the hospital and stay there. So coming
for,
to the hospital
for what purpose? Though?
Protesting, moving their center of protest from the roundabout to the hospital. So they made the hospital as roundabout number two.
Has anybody presented any evidence to this?
A lot of evidence. I have it with me now. I can show it to you, but you should just go to YouTube.
So the reports that protesters were prevented from getting treatment, that protesters were being beaten,
protesters
are completely false?
You can look at the video.
Well, I have. I've seen so much video at this point.
The thing, what you see, the protesters were in control of the hospital. They were at the hospital in the front of the emergency room, shouting slogans and this and that, and they were in control of the whole area. So nobody else was really in control of that. So How is it possible that they cannot get care if they were controlling the area?
Let me ask you a personal question. Mm. You were not working that evening, but say you were out for a stroll, you saw the protesters at the roundabout, and you had been nearby at the time that police began shooting tear gas and ammunition, and you saw injured. As a doctor, what would your response have been at that moment?
I will help.
You would help?
Definitely. Definitely. But we have as I tell all my staff, first protect yourself.
Yeah.
There's no point in me going killing myself and then not helping anybody. I'll secure my staff that it is secure for them to get to the patient, and then I will help. But I will not go in the middle of the. I mean, this is the. I mean,
well, that makes sense.
The standard.
But
I
if you saw somebody bleeding, battered, with a bullet wound.
Definitely I'll help.
And the doctors in the hospital were not?
Oh, they were. They wanted help. There are, again, some videos which shows you the emergency staff are standing aside in the resuscitation room, cannot do anything. They were just on one side, and the other journalists, mullahs,
yes.
They were there talking to certain patients which were on the other side of the resuscitation room. And these patients who were not critically ill were assist and treated by specific doctors from the demonstrators.
I've seen video of almost everything at this point. I've seen video that substantiates what all sides claim. I think I'm approaching this from a standpoint of, is it possible that in all the chaos that doctors and nurses and lab technicians could have simply been so angered at what they saw that it created that kind of divide?
I wouldn't agree with that.
Okay.
Me as a physician, mm-hmm. or somebody with a healthcare profession,
mm-hmm.
Suppose you get somebody who is drunk driving a car and he hits somebody. Meanwhile, after that he hits another car and he gets also hurt. I will be angry at him, probably, because he injured somebody, a bystander. But will that prevent me from treating him? No. I'll be treating him and the bystander. Even though I think deeply in myself, he might be the reason for hitting the other guy. So for us physicians and those who are working in the healthcare to use our emotions in terms of making them affect the way we provide care, it shouldn't be there, and it's not there.
You say it's not there, and yet that's exactly what these doctors are being charged with. They're being charged with promoting the overthrow of the government, spreading false information, embezzling public funds, death, assault and death in the case of two patients. The doctors are accused of inflicting additional wounds to one and mistreating the other, leading to their death in order to exaggerate claims. Mm-hmm. All right. You're saying, do you know these staff?
I do know. I am saying as doctors and nurses, we shouldn't.
But you're saying they did.
Well, there is evidence that they did. I have testimonials from doctors and nurses from who saw things happening. I have testimonials from some nurses, six of them actually, from the ICU, mm-hmm. stating that one of these doctors switched off the oxygen on an ICU patient because he was an expatriate and she wanted him to be dead.
There are two cases in particular that have been cited in the by the Bahraini news agency. An Ali Ahmed Abdullah, who was who sustained an injury to the thigh, and in the presence of media, for media drama, the surgeon, it is said, added several wounds, cut extra wounds into the patient's body, deliberately expanding, making the injury worse. And the patient was transferred to the ICU and died. That's the one report.
I wasn't a witness of this, so I cannot say anything about it. But if I tell you that I have a testimonial, during when the military came in to clear the area, there was one of the religious people who was there, and he was taken by two ICU doctors to the intensive care unit. he was shaved. They shaved his beard and his hair, and they made a cut wound on him, and they stitched him, and they dressed him as a patient, and they kept him in the intensive care unit for 2 days.
They being?
The two doctors.
The doctors.
Yeah.
Who were, I'm taking on the side of the protesters then.
Well, I presume they were. And after 2 days, the patient was taken out anyhow. So, well, he was not a patient, but.
Somebody else is apparently administered atropine to someone. What is the standard, and I'll keep this very short, but a man presents in your ER. He's got tear gas powder all over him. He's burning. He's gagging. He's. How do you treat him?
Tear gas does not produce this powder that you have seen to start with. And if you have seen the pictures, it was Moxal or milk of magnesium which was right. used to cover these people with. Atropine is a very strong medicine we use in resuscitating somebody who is dying from a cardiac arrest. When the heart stops, we use atropine to stimulate the heart. It makes it beat fast.
Yes.
That's during an arrest.
It's also used against nerve gas, though.
The other use of atropine is for nerve gas, and the military, they use it. You don't use only atropine. There is another substance which is called pralodexin.
Yes.
It's combined with atropine in one syringe, and it's given to the military, and they inject themselves intramuscularly if there was nerve gas.
Okay, so, now, but if you have doctors, you say, who are not emergency specialists, you say you had plastic surgeons, you had gynecologists, you know, trying to help the protesters who are tear gas burns. Is it possible that they could have used whatever they thought would reduce the acidity? It's an acidic.
Atropine, no, it will not cause any
problem. No, the aluminum hydroxide.
Well, why it was not used all over the body? Why it was used only over the face and part of the chest here?
That part that's exposed by clothing? Yeah. I'm playing devil's advocate here, doctor. But help.
No, under the clothing, to a little bit. Why? And it was drunk. We have tons of moxa which disappeared. Now, can I elaborate a little bit? If you want to create a story, nerve gas is a killer.
Yes.
Nerve gas does not know Shiis or Sunnis or policemen or non-policemen. When you get exposed to nerve gas, you have to really to have your protective suit on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're dead in few minutes. In the first few minutes, you might have some symptoms which we call cholinergic symptoms, which are sweating, salivating, lacrimating, maybe some shortness of breath. These symptoms were already caused by the tear gas.
Yes.
But if you want to induce hallucination, seizures, then either you give them milk of magnesium or Moxal in big quantities, it causes a state which is called alkalosis. Alkalosis leads to hyperventilation. Hyperventilation leads to twitches. Twitches can simulate seizures one way, or you give them atropine in high doses. Atropine is an anticholinergic which has got side effects. It can cause supraventricular tachycardia, the heart beats very fast. It can cause hallucinations, seizures. So,
I leap. Is it possible these doctors who were not specialists, I presume a plastic surgeon has never had to treat somebody for tear gas exposure in his life, is it possible that these were the kinds of mistakes that physicians would make who didn't have that specialty?
No. I would clearly state no, because atropine is such a substance that only few people know how it works, which are emergency physicians and intensive care doctors. These are the two people or the two specialties which usually know how atropine works in the way we use it, not atropine as a drops, which is used by the ophthalmologist and all of that. So whoever used atropine, he had some exposure, some knowledge of what it does. And we did have emergency physicians with the demonstrators, by the way. Few of them, not everybody. And we did have intensive care doctors who were involved. So I personally cannot accept that atropine will be used by anybody just like that, because first of all, it's not available for everybody. It's a drug that we keep in a secured area for cardiac arrest. I mean, but when you get thousands of ampoules missing.
Were they missing?
Oh, yes, they were. They were used.
All right. You know, we could probably go case by case by case, but let's pull it out to the broader picture. Why? How? How was this organized, are you saying?
Well, you told me Al Jazeera was already there. Where did Al Jazeera come from?
Well, covering the protests, I would assume. They had taken over the Pearl Roundabout for several days, hadn't they?
Yeah, but how come they were at the hospital?
If I were a journalist, I would have been there the minute they started firing.
Well, Press TV, Al Alam TV,
that's
Iran TV.
So your suggestion...
I cannot suggest anything, but what I have seen and witnessed, and what I have seen through the videos and through personal communication, I cannot interpret it in any other way that there was something planned. Again, it's not for me to comment on that. I'm a physician.
But your doctor, your brothers, and I know the code of doctors is the same all over the world. You really do believe that they were part of a plot?
Not everybody.
But these individuals who are being
but
charged.
Few probably were. I shouldn't say probably, few were, especially if I had testimonials already from those who witnessed all of this, telling us that this doctor and this doctor did so and so.
But 40 doctors and nurses?
Yeah, you know, the Ministry of Health has got 9,000 employees. So 40 is nothing compared to 9,000 when you think about it.
So how do we understand this then? I mean, if you had to sum it up, you work in Salmania Hospital.
Yeah, I think healthcare was compromised. That's what I will comment. Healthcare was compromised by a group of extremists and what they did is that they were the cause of denying care to people to come to Salmania.
And there was no case that you're aware of in which a doctor was afraid to give care to the protesters for fear of the ramifications?
No, protesters, whoever was there was getting care. I mean, we do give care, but I'll tell you an example. The expatriates that were handcuffed, who were brought in, one of them was severely bleeding from a cut. We had to take him to the resuscitation room. A colleague of mine, he was there. He told the maxillofacial surgeon who was dragging this patient that I cannot treat him like this. I need to take the handcuffs out to cut them off. He said, no, treat him as such. He's a criminal. How can a doctor label a patient as a criminal? Anyhow, I'll finish. So our doctor who was there, who was not pro-government or anti-government, he was just a physician doing his work, he insisted on cutting that, and because the bleeding, the patient was deteriorating, he did finally cut the handcuffs or whatever they were, the plastic things, and he did manage to suture the guy, the patient. Care was given whether to the hostages or even the demonstrators when they came in with the exposure to tear gas. We had some of our, I'm not saying that all of our doctors did not participate in the treatment, but some of them were not allowed to do their job properly because of the chaos. What happened simply, we created a disaster within a disaster. What happened in Bahrain, it was a disaster in one way or the other. But when those people, those doctors who had nothing to do with whatever happened in disaster medicine, they came in and they took over the emergency services, they created a disaster themselves there through interfering with the provision of proper care to everybody, not only to the protesters.
Knowingly or by virtue of the fact that they stepped out of their departments?
No, I don't think just stepping out of the department was the thing. I think there were much more than that. I mean, it happens during disaster that we make a call that we need this and that, and other doctors might come in and we tell them, thank you, we don't need your help. If we need you, we call you. But that was not the case there. The case was there is, we are the bosses, you stay aside. If we need you, we get you in. It just turned 180 degrees, so that's what happened.
Dr. Al-Ansari, thank you so much for talking with us.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Nabil Al-Ansari. He's chief of emergency medicine at Bahrain Salmania Hospital, and he's also the head of the Bahrain Medical Society.
Cecily, Dr. Al-Ansari tells such a different story than we've seen from, say, Human Rights Watch or Physicians for Human Rights. How do you reconcile the two?
Well, I'm not sure that you do. At any rate, that's not our job as journalists. We've aired several reports and interviews with Bahraini human rights activists, and they've told us of all kinds of reported human rights abuses by the government during the recent uprisings. In the interest of being fair and balanced, as reporters, we asked the government of Bahrain several times to give us their official perspective, and therefore we welcome the chance to sit down with Dr. Al-Ansari and ask some of the tougher questions that have been raised.
And tomorrow we'll be airing part two of your interview with Dr. Al-Ansari. If our listeners would like to hear the full version, log on to our website at voanews.com/ME. Thanks for stopping by, Cecily.
Thanks, Susie.